Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
As has been true the last few weeks, we are running pre-taped shows because, hopefully, I'm on my honeymoon when you hear this. Our guest tonight is David Switzer. David was our guest on our show, possibly aired last week, when he and a friend named Kyle were awarded $200,000 from the Virgin River Casino in Mesquite, Nevada, relating to how they were treated while being backroomed. David recently graduated from UNLV and completed an MBA and a master's degree. And his master's thesis was written on the subject of how casinos are inappropriately reacting to the threat of blackjack counters. We'll be discussing that thesis tonight. David Switzer, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for letting me on again.
All right. So, although it was a couple weeks ago when we actually taped the show on the lawsuit, our listeners are thinking this is back to back. They must think we like you or something. All right. First of all, let's add some context. What kind of degree program were you in at UNLV, and what do you want to be when you grow up?
It was a master's program, and it was a dual degree, an MBA and a master's in hotel casino administration. So I got two master's degrees in 2.5 years, which is usually the time it takes to get one. So I thought it was a pretty good deal.
How did you get time to get booted out of the Mesquite Casino if you're working on two master's degrees?
Well, the master's program was only at night, so I really only had classes 5:30 to 8:15, 3 days a week, so plenty of time.
All right.
So now I assume that when you entered this program, it was because you wanted to run a casino?
No.
So what brought you into that program?
That's what everybody would think. I mean, that makes sense that I would do that. A normal person would. Everybody else did that. I got my undergraduate from Michigan State, a bachelor's in hospitality business, but I worked at a hotel for about 8 months and realized I hated it.
So that's a good reason to get a master's degree in it.
Yeah. So I wanted to move to Las Vegas, and I wanted to get an MBA. And then when I saw the program at UNLV that I could get an MBA and a master's in hotel casino administration for the same length of time, I figured I would just get both and I could learn more about casinos that way.
Huh. So right now, obviously you're doing a lot of playing, but do you plan to go into business or what is the plan ultimately?
Yeah, actually in about 2 months, I'm moving to Chicago. Me and a couple friends are starting it's basically a small currency trading hedge fund. That should be. I'm mixing it up a little bit, but I'm not going to stop playing. I'm sure I'll be in Vegas 2-3 weekends a month still.
Yeah. Well, they do have casinos in Chicago, so
they do. Yeah.
Well, currency trading hedge fund sounds like a much bigger casino than they have in Chicago.
Yeah, but they're just as dumb, so no problem.
Uh huh. That's famous last words. All right. Good. So, the general premise of your paper is that when casinos guard against Advantage players, they do so by taking time-extensive countermeasures, which end up being more expensive to them. Tell us about that. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that was the whole purpose of my paper. I was trying to... it wasn't a thesis, so I didn't have to do any primary research. I was basically just summarizing already existing data and trying to add to it on my own. So I wasn't out there timing shuffles or anything, but it ended up being about 22 pages, the title being How Casinos Can Increase Their Table Games Revenue by Properly Training Employees and Adjusting Many of the Procedures They Use to Stop Advantage Players.
Well, that took a page and a half itself, so it was really only 19 and a half pages.
I tried to cut it down, but I actually added to it at the end about training employees, because that really is what it came down to me, is just training employees.
All right. So one of the ways casinos, like, what kind of threat do casinos really face from blackjack counters?
Well, the argument of my paper was basically zero. I interviewed a few people. I interviewed Richard. I interviewed Bill Zender. I used him a lot in the paper. I talked to James Grosjean a little bit. I interviewed
Max Rubin. His name was in there.
Yep, interviewed Max Rubin.
Now, those are three members of the Blackjack Hall of Fame. I kind of know which side they're on.
Yep, and I put that in my paper, too, that they were all in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. I thought that was pretty cool. So, yeah, basically, my paper is about how casinos don't need to worry about low and kind of medium-level counters. And then when you get into the really big-time counters, like who are playing in big teams with seven-figure bankrolls, then maybe you have to start worrying about them. But you shouldn't try to deal with them by doing things like having terrible penetration or no mid-shoe entry or having really long shuffles.
Okay.
Right. So, yeah, so let's talk about some of the things that casinos do that where they are shooting themselves in the foot. Let's start there.
Okay. So the first part of my paper, I outlined the ways that casinos are currently costing themselves money, and the second half was basically my recommendations for what they can do to start increasing their revenue. So the first part I started with shuffling. And the first example, the first example I used was a shuffle they use on single deck games at Caesar's Palace in Atlantic City. This was the most complicated shuffle I've ever seen. I'm going to look at my paper here to make sure I don't miss anything. Okay. The procedure was, and they have an automatic shuffler machine, too, at the table. The dealer would riffle the cards. He would then wash the entire deck of cards. He would riffle twice. He would strip the cards. He would riffle two more times. Then he would put the deck into the automatic shuffler. Then he would cut the cards. Then he would start dealing. And that took so long and was so unnecessary that is basically what inspired me to write my paper.
Now, this is a game where they pay 6 to 5 on blackjack.
Yeah. So I put that in my paper, too. I was like, well, I know it's single deck, but card counters aren't going to waste their time with this game. And you have an automatic shuffler right there. You're paying either $600 a month or $22,000 to buy this thing. And the way I put it was, it's like if you buy a $22,000 washing machine, but you wash your clothes in the sink and put them on a clothesline, wait for them to dry, but then put them in your washing machine. It just doesn't make any sense. What?
Yeah, whoever put that procedure in should be fired. This actually has absolutely nothing to do with card counting either. So,
right.
You know, I don't know. They must be afraid that the shuffling machine, you must be able to sequence the cards in some way. I mean, all the washing and shuffling before you put it in the machine, that's all that's going to prevent, right? Is some kind of way of tracking the shuffle or sequencing the shuffle. And if you really believe that the shuffling machine is that bad, then why are you paying for it?
That's exactly right. If you're going to pay for it, you might as well trust it. It just didn't make any sense to me. If you want to go crazy on your shuffles, fine, but you don't need to waste your money on a shuffling machine then.
Yeah, I've actually often said this to pit bosses because I see this is really common, not that bad, what you're describing, but it's really common for them to riffle the cards before they put it in the machine. Yep. And I always ask them, like, why do you pay all that money for that machine if you don't trust it? You know?
But you didn't consider
time how long it took them to do that shuffle, did you?
Yeah. This was actually straight out of one of the papers from Elliot Jacobson. I only used one of his. So basically, he said an average riffle takes 4 seconds to complete. If a blackjack table is active for 16 hours a day at 40 rounds per hour, which is probably low, but then the casino is spending 2,560 seconds on riffling. That translates into 28 rounds per day. And if there's an average of $50 wagered across the table, then that one riffle, just one riffle, costs the casino $42 per day in profit. So if we were to multiply that by the number of tables at Caesar's Palace in Atlantic City, which is 4, over the course of a year, then that just doing one riffle would cost the casino $61,000 per year. Just one riffle.
Right. Well, and that's based on a normal blackjack game. This is a 6-to-5 game, so it's costing them even more.
Yeah, because every
and the
hand,
wash,
yeah.
A wash takes far longer than a riffle. I mean, that's really crazy to do a wash.
That wash is, yeah. Everything else I can understand. Like, yeah, you want a riffle. Like, casinos do weird stuff, but the wash was just unbelievable. I could not believe that.
Could they be concerned about edge sorting, where the wash would help guard against that?
Sure, but there's way easier ways to get rid of edge sorters than doing that. You do not need to wash the cards.
Okay, yeah, you can cut them in half and turn half of them is one good way.
Right. So, I mean, so again, this is a 6-to-5 game. There's a chapter in James Grosjean's book, Exhibit CAA. I think it's titled "How Stupid Is the Beau Rivage?" Because they had a 6-to-5 single deck game where their policy was to deal one round and shuffle. Now, I mean, you know, and their reasoning, they claim, was that they didn't want to run out of cards because there were 6 players at the table. And the chapter goes on to show that the chances of that happening are, you know, you'd have a better chance of being hit by lightning 3 times or something. So again, I mean, they can't really believe that they may run out of cards. I mean, casinos in Nevada for 60 years have dealt 2 rounds to 7 spots of single deck, even back when it paid 3-to-2. And, you know, they weren't concerned about running out of cards. So, you know, I can only presume that they think that they're thwarting card counters. And again, it's on a 6-to-5 game. It just, you know, it's just another case where they really shoot themselves in the foot, cost themselves money.
All right. So we've dealt with casino shuffle too much. What about the no mid-shoe entry? How does that hurt the casino?
Okay, no mid-shoe entry. Well, let's talk about penetration first, actually, because that came next.
Okay, let's talk about penetration.
Okay. Yeah, so basically, probably everyone listening to the show, if you play blackjack, know that when you're card counting, all you're doing is looking for the best, well, not all, but what you're doing is looking for the best penetration. And, you know, if you see a game that's like, I don't know, 80%, you're like, wow, this is insane. I can't believe I found, like, such a good game. Because casinos, we're so used to casinos' penetration being so poor. And, you know, me and my AP friends for years were like, well, if they just deal more cards, all the regular players will play more hands and casinos are making more money. So I looked into that, and Bill Zender has been writing about all of this for
20 years.
Yes, he has. And this is where I got my information, and I guess he's just being ignored. He said on a manually shuffled game, the reduction in deck penetration of a half deck costs the casino about 6 rounds per hour, and on a machine shuffled game, it costs 2 rounds per hour. And his whole thing is, when you increase penetration, you increase the number of decisions, and then you increase your revenue. it's just that easy. It's one sentence. My whole paper comes down to one sentence, really. But casinos are so, I don't know, they're so afraid of card counters that they're willing to just throw their own games down the drain. Like, I don't know if they believe the media hype or what, but they're just so afraid that a team of MIT kids are going to come in and bankrupt them that they're just, they're not thinking rationally, in my opinion. And one of my favorite quotes was, this was from Mike Aponte. He was talking to the director of surveillance at the Le Berge Casino in Lake Charles, and the director of surveillance estimated that over the last 4 years, the number of card counters he has backed off is 0.00006% of the total gamblers that have played at that period, and that and that works out to less than 1 in a million gamblers.
Yeah, that it doesn't surprise me that the figure would be that low. I mean,
1 in a million. It surprises me that it's that low. Casinos back off more than that, I think. Not properly, but they do.
That was what I was going to say is the ones where the number is higher are probably backing off people that they shouldn't back off.
Yes, that too. That was a lot of my paper too, was, and Max Rubin talked about that too. He was saying, you know, just because you see a guy counting cards, you don't have to kick him out. Card counting is, it's a lot of, the process of counting cards isn't that hard, but everything that goes into it, your betting, the indices, everything you have to remember, your bankroll, you can, if you're not really diligent, Max Rubin says, hey, people go on tilt. Let him play. If he loses some hands, he might just go crazy and just start blowing his bankroll. He would just let him play for a while. And Bill Zender kind of added that too. I mean, regular people like to see action. So if they go and see a guy sitting, betting hands of, you know, two hands of 1,000, they might sit down and be like, oh, this is a hot table. I want to bet too. So the card counter's presence alone is increasing revenue to the casino.
Yeah, another thing that that I don't think that they take into account often enough is the totality of the guy's play or the guy and his wife, right? I mean, so they bar some guy who's spreading, you know, a quarter to 200 on the double deck without looking at his account and seeing that he likes to play craps and that after he plays blackjack and that his wife is off playing the slot machines. You know, I mean, it's just sort of crazy. I keep saying that word, but, you know, but I mean, I guess if they were really bright people, they wouldn't be working in casinos.
I've played with people like that, APs, who, you know, will play a hole carding game where your EV is, I don't know, a couple thousand per hour. And he was so worried about his image that he would maybe make, you know, $30,000, $40,000, but he would go to the craps table afterwards, blow $50,000, and we're like, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, well, I played on my card. I have this huge craps loss, so it'll buy me some time. And we're like, that is the most psycho thing I've ever seen.
But in reality, he's just a degenerate.
Yeah, we don't play with him anymore.
Yeah.
All right. Now, how about mid-shoe entry? Is it okay for that now?
Sure.
Oh, good. I feel like I've lost control of this interview somehow. Good.
Okay, so my third part, I talked about no mid-shoe entry, which is obviously they'll put a sign up, and if you don't start playing from the beginning of the shoe or the first hand of the deck, you can't play. You just have to sit there. And I've seen it happen a lot. You'll be playing and someone will sit down and be like, oh, no, you have to wait. And they're like, what do you mean I have to wait? And they're like, well, you have to wait for the shuffle. And they'll be like, well, there's 7 decks left. And they'll just get up and leave. It's like, okay. So basically casinos are doing that to stop back counters and then to probably a larger degree BP teams, which Al Francesco came up with, and then obviously, Ken Houston popularized it with his book. So I talk about that in my paper, and it's just so obvious to me that that procedure is so bad that I can't believe anyone uses it. And I guess the only reason you would do that is if your staff is so incompetent that they have no chance of catching card counters. So you basically just, you have to have that rule because you're just turning people away. Bill Zender talks about a lot. He talks a lot about that too. He said if a casino uses the policy of no mid-shoe entry on blackjack, it costs three rounds per hour. And he calculated that by assuming that 5% of blackjack customers in a casino are looking for a game in which to play.
Yeah, you would almost never, anybody who wants to go in and sit down and play blackjack, if they're dealing six or eight decks of cards, you're almost never going to arrive at the table when they're shuffling or there's a dead spread.
No.
But what about on single deck?
That's another thing they do is they close all the tables when they're dead to try to, you know, force all the players onto, you know, a smaller amount of tables so they can save minimum wage that they're paying the dealer who would be standing there.
Right.
But presumably it makes some sense on single and double deck, which are more easily wongable by, or which are wongable by a larger number of people.
I mean, that's true, but it just comes down to if you have a competent staff. I mean, when I used to count cards maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I would sit down and, you know, you put out a big bet, and me being a young kid, sometimes the boss would just pick up the discards, would just rifle through, and he's like, huh, the true count's plus seven. That's probably a good time to bet big. And I was like, oh, well, I should probably leave, you know?
There are a lot of bosses who do that who don't actually know what they're doing.
Yes.
I mean, they just,
I have
they
seen
do it
that
to see if the player reacts. You know,
yeah,
but they're
I've
not actually
them,
able to count the cards themselves.
No, and they're just flipping through, but there's just like a dead look in their eyes. And they're just trying to, then they'll keep looking at me to see if I react. I'm just like, I'm not going anywhere, man. You have no clue what you're doing.
All right. So are those the three principles of shuffling? Too much penetration and no mid-shoe entry. Are those the three main ways they shoot themselves in the foot?
The first half of my paper was just outlining what they are and why they're costing the casino money.
Okay.
Then the fourth part, which I didn't talk about in the first part, I just talked about later on, was about legal consequences and really training your security staff and your floor staff. So I guess I can kind of shift over and talk about the second half of my paper when I kind of gave my opinion on what they should do.
All right. What do you think they should do?
Okay, so when it comes to shuffles, obviously what you have to do is shuffle faster and make it less complicated. And my advice, actually after talking to Max Rubin, was just get an automatic shuffling machine. There's $600. Well, as of right now, he said there's $600 a month or $22,000 to buy. But according to him, Bill Zender, and everyone who knows what they're talking about, you're going to make up for that cost real quick by the amount of increased decisions you're going to get per hour. Some would also, you could argue that, well, you should just make your shuffles really, really simple. Because there's not that many shuffle trackers left. That's kind of what Bill Zender was leaning towards, but Max Rubin said, no, you can't have too easy of a shuffle because shuffle trackers are still around and single pass shuffles are insanely beatable. That was his quote. So,
well, but the thing is that it's really sort of like the ecology of the jungle, right? And so if the shuffles die, then the shuffle trackers die out, you know, just like the water hole. When the water hole goes dry, the animals move on somewhere else. But if there's a lot of rain and the water hole comes back, the animals are going to come back.
Yeah.
You know, and so the advantage players will find whatever the advantage play game is, you know. So if the easy shuffles come back, then shuffle trackers will come back. More people will start to learn because they have something to practice on, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've never learned how to shuffle track. I know quite a few people who are really good at it, but, you know, if all the casinos on this trip started doing one-pass shuffles, it would just be a nightmare of APs here. It would be unbelievable. So with that in mind, I said, you know, just go ahead and buy an automatic shuffling machine. And, you know, then you should probably use it and not just make it for show like Caesar's Palace in Atlantic City.
Would you have one red deck, one blue deck, and so while you're dealing one, have the other one being shuffled?
That's what most casinos do, yeah.
All right. So other than, and take away your no mucha entry and put all of your penetration, your penetrate of a quarter of a deck on an 8-deck shoe. Is that about what you want?
Yeah. When it came to penetration, Bill Zender said all you need to cut off is half a deck. 26 cards is quite sufficient to finish a round. And he actually gave an example in one of his papers, which I thought was really interesting. He was an executive at the Aladdin in the 1990s. I'm not sure exactly what his position was. But
I think he was the casino manager.
I think he was too, actually. So he was real high up there. And what the Aladdin did was they increased their blackjack penetration from 66% to 92%, because management believed that they could stop all the card counters by just having a diligent staff. And if somehow they just kind of missed a card counter once in a while, the additional revenue that they would make from better penetration would make up for any undiscovered card counters they missed. Not that I think Bill Zender would be missing a lot of card counters, but then he said, he went on to say a few months after the new procedure was initiated, the Aladdin's new hold percentage outperformed every single casino on the Las Vegas Strip. So he's out there, and I don't know if he's being treated as just like an academic. I've heard people say, oh, I had a casino professor at UNLV kind of writing similar things, and casinos will say, oh, no, you're an academic. You're up in an ivory tower. You don't know what you're saying. And Bill Zender's like, well, you know, I used to work at the Aladdin. We did this real-life scenario, and it worked. But casinos are like, well, you know, whatever. We'll just keep doing
it. They just don't believe it.
No.
Yeah, they just don't believe it.
No.
Well, part of it is Bill Zender had competent staff to work with, and he could train them. I, years ago, was talking to casino managers in Mississippi, and at that time, the unemployment rate in those areas was something like 3%. And so to get a job at a casino, you had to be breathing. And little things like fraud in your background or inability to count to 12 without using your fingers and taking your shoes off, those were not showstoppers in getting a casino job. Now, so casinos in that area, like most of the listeners in our show have been through
I knew I used to like playing in Mississippi for a reason.
Yeah. So the casinos who have that to work with, identifying card counters is not such a trivial task. Now, in your book, you're quoting Richard Munchkin and James Grosjean and Mike Aponte and Max Rubin, and these guys are all pretty damn good. And they can count blindfolded and every which way but loose. So they can smell a counter from 3 miles away. But there are casinos where that's not true, and they have no chance of training their casino people that well. Isn't this true, or am I just making, or do you think I'm just exaggerating it?
No, that's probably true. There's probably tons of casinos. I know for a fact there's tons of casinos who you could spread 1 to 100 right in front of them, and they're like, wow, this guy is crazy gambler. We love him. But when it comes down to it, I mean, you just have to train them. You have to find people in your staff who are competent enough to learn the basics of counting cards. They don't need to know everything. They don't need to worry about bankroll management or anything. They just have to learn what it is, really. And that would be enough to stop a majority of at least low and middle card counters.
You know, back 30, 40 years ago, the guys who worked in the pits were a lot smarter about, I don't want to say about counting cards, but about sort of advantage play in general. Like, they knew when something didn't smell right, you know. I remember one time, you know, I was playing in Bally's, and this is, you know, 30-some years ago, and there was this guy named Vic Wakeman. We used to call him the eye in the rug because he was about 5 feet tall. And he came and he just came and was staring at me while they were shuffling the cards, and I happened to be shuffle tracking. And they offered me the cut. I cut the shoe, and I put out, you know, two hands of 500 off the top. And he just walked up and he pushed the bets back and said, "I don't know what you're doing, but I don't want your action." You know, and I believe that was true, that he didn't know what I was doing, but he just thought it didn't smell right. And I think there were a lot of bosses like that back then. And nowadays, bosses are so busy running around, filling out players' cards, rating slips, you know, all of that kind of stuff. They've really become clerks and they don't really know much about the games. So I agree with you that they have to be trained. But, Bob, you know, I mean, think about if you ran the circus. You know, if I owned the casino, and let's put it, you know, in the middle of Oklahoma or somewhere, you know, in the middle of nowhere, well, I would get good staff because I know it's important. And I wouldn't accept the idea that, well, there's just nobody out there to hire, you know, because I think – I would pay the extra money to get good people, and I would train them. And, you know, I just wouldn't accept the idea that it couldn't be done.
There's sometimes somebody who has that attitude doesn't have the highest vote. And he has bosses who have different votes and will overrule him.
Well, it all starts at the top. I mean, it all starts at the top. And if you have an idiot running the place, there's nothing you can do. One of the most incredible stories that I ever heard on this show was when we had Bill Zender as a guest.
Yes.
And he was talking with a table games manager and a casino manager together. And I forget the exact numbers, but the idea is he said to the table games manager, "Would you rather hold 15% and win $1 million or hold 10% and win $1.5 million? And the table games manager said, "I would rather hold 15% and win $1 million. And he said, But the other way, you make $1.5 million. And he said, "But it doesn't matter, because if I hold 15%, the casino manager is going to say I'm doing a good job. And if I hold 10%, he's going to say I'm doing a terrible job." And the casino manager was sitting right there and said, "Yeah, that's right." You know, I mean,
what part of that don't you understand, Richard? That seems pretty simple.
Well, I don't understand why that guy is the casino manager. That's what I don't understand.
That's why it wouldn't really work for me to just go get a job, like an entry-level job at in a table games position, I think, because I had a really smart casino professor, and he was like, "You know, if you can save the casino 2, 3% a year, you're going to be a superstar. But when you start making crazy ideas, like, you know, increasing your penetration or having less complicated shuffles, then they'll just get rid of you. If you go against the status quo, you have so many people to answer to, it's really hard. So it has to come from the top."
Yeah. All right. Now, David, you are a successful advantage player. If casinos implemented all these procedures that you're recommending, it would actually make your job, your AP job, easier. So isn't this a self-serving thesis that you're finding ways to make your job easier, and you're getting AP buddies to give you quotes to justify that position. Is this a fair criticism?
Not really. We did skip one part of my paper, though, about the legal aspect.
All right.
Wait, let me get to that in a second, because okay. I'd like to answer that. I really believe there can be situations where it is win-win. The casinos would make more money, and a very tiny percentage of APs would also make more money. But I don't think there's any doubt the casinos would make more money if they implemented these procedures. And I would say that, Bob, wouldn't you say the same thing about when you consult on video poker?
Absolutely.
You tell them things that certainly help you, but they also are good for the casino.
Sometimes they help me, but yes, the most profitable way to have video poker is also allows for the top players to have an edge.
If you take that away. Your paper didn't cover this, David, but another place where casinos just kill themselves is in the slots and video poker. Why you would ever bar a slot machine player or a video poker player is just insane.
Video poker especially, that is, there's so many games and it's so hard to learn the strategy that there's got to be tons and tons of people out there who are like, oh, I'm playing with an edge. And it's like, no, you're not even close.
Well, but even so, even if they are playing, well, they're not playing with an edge. They might be playing with an edge if you include the slot club,
yeah,
but all
I mean.
You have to do is just stop giving them slot points. You don't bar them. You don't want them to stop going to your restaurants and, you know,
yeah.
whatever. I mean, you
that
know,
doesn't,
and,
no, that and, makes no sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Exactly.
Unless there were integrity issues involved, then it can make sense to bar them.
Oh, you mean if they were cheating or something?
Yeah, they were doing something very antisocial or... Stealing somebody else's credits or...
sure, yeah, well, that's
hitting
a
little old
thing.
Ladies over the head, something like that.
Well, yeah, on this same topic, I'll talk about legal later, but on the self-serving... the biggest thing was, yeah, I'm an AP. Yeah, technically this paper, if I still counted cards, would make card counting more money for me. But the kind of overall part of my paper that I was trying to get out there was, if you just train your staff, then none of these procedures are going to matter anyway because your staff can stop them. Catching card counters is so easy. I was playing on the East Coast with a guy you actually had on the show, Moo, who was,
yes.
I think he's actually my accountant.
Moo the cash cow.
Yeah.
right.
So we were playing a double deck game. And across the pit, we see a young kid, and he's playing. He has all his chips in front of him, just really neatly stacked, like really just like aggressively neat, all color-coded. He's playing two spots, and as the cards are being dealt out, he's just moving his head back and forth. So after two, we couldn't even see what he was betting. But Moo turned over to me and goes, oh, that guy's counting cards for sure. And I was like, I can't even see what he's betting. He's like, no, he's counting cards. So we went up to him in the bathroom later, and Moo was like, oh, hey, man, are you, like, on this blackjack forum? And the kid was like, oh, yeah, for sure. Like, who are you? Yeah, I was definitely counting cards. And we're like, oh, you want to go to the steakhouse and eat? He was like, yeah. So we didn't even see what he was betting, just the way he was acting. It's just so simple. I mean, maybe I'm so used to it at this point, but it just seems... It seems so obvious.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
But you have studied a lot, and you're much brighter than average. Now, the smartest APs are considerably brighter than the average casino worker, and the smartest casino workers are brighter than the average player. But the people you're quoting in your paper are among the brightest APs out there and most successful APs out there.
Yeah.
Now, you're not in that category yet, but you might be.
And Rubin did say one of his things about why casinos should be afraid of APs is, you know, you have a shift boss who comes to work at 12 and goes home at 8, and he goes with his family and eats dinner. But APs are constantly being APs. They're always thinking about ways to gain an edge over the casino. So casinos are constantly at a disadvantage from the top APs.
Right, but not because, but the procedures you're talking about aren't things that thwart them.
No, not at all. I'm talking about low level, mid level APs, which the casinos seem to be very, very worried about for some reason.
Well, because they know about them, right?
Yes.
It's the thing they know, you know, the fear they know. They don't realize what they don't know
because they'd
lose a lot more sleep if they actually realized what was going on.
Well, that's part of the thesis where the people David is quoting in his paper do know. And so they can properly evaluate the risks because they have some knowledge of what kind of risks are out there. But if a casino executive doesn't really understand the risk and they're just putting up defenses.
But they're kind of doing a rain dance. You know what I mean? They're doing voodoo because they think it'll help and it's just superstition. You know, it would be one thing if they were doing something that actually helped them, but they're not. They're doing something that hurts them.
And they think it's helping them, which is not good.
Well, if you had to do away with superstitions, Las Vegas would close.
Yeah.
Superstitions.
Yeah, but the superstition is supposed to be on the player's side. Yeah. Not
well,
on the
I don't know.
Side.
Years ago, the Lawrence Revere book talked about how dumb.
Even in this day and age, there is still a casino that keeps bird seed in the crap pit and throws it under the crap table when the dice are hot.
Bird seed.
That's unbelievable.
I would love
to play there. That would be amazing.
I wonder, bird seed. What kind of birds are they growing with this bird seed?
There used to be some superstition about the stick man calling up a hand or something, singing like a bird. I forget where this idea came from, but
all right. So, are you familiar with any casino with maybe not mentioning names that has good procedures? And it's successful in the way they deal blackjack?
There's a lot, actually. I can't name any names, but there's lots of casinos out there who do it correctly.
Actually, I do hear periodically reading the blackjack boards. I hear, Bill Zender must be consulting at this place because they have great penetration, but you get backed off right away if you know what you're doing. So, you know, he does go out and do consulting, and I guess there are some, not in Vegas, but there are casinos, you know, out in other places that are listening to him and implementing his ideas.
Yeah, and one of his big ideas was, besides the procedures, was about training your staff on actually how to handle backoffs and barrings. I know he and Max Rubin agree if you're going to back someone off, I've had hilarious backoffs before. You know, a casino manager will sit at my table and be like, "Hey, man, what's up?" And I'm like, "Hey," because I think it's a host. And they're like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, I'm just playing blackjack. And they're like, "Oh, no, you can't play anymore." And I was like, "Why?" And they're like, "You know why. Just, like, stop." I just laugh. I'm like, okay.
You know, I always appreciated those kind of back-offs, you know, a lot more than the guys who try to be a hard ass or, you know, try to be a smart ass. You know what I mean?
Bill Zender says he would take card counters to lunch afterwards and just talk to them. I mean, it's just... But so many do it so wrong, and that was basically, I almost changed my entire paper just to write about this, about poor backoffs and 86s, because there's so much information about it, but nobody knows about it.
Well, you had some personal information on that.
I have. It happened the other day, actually. I can't say where, but I was put in a back room for 4 hours and dragged through the casino, so that was fun.
You have another lawsuit.
Is Mr. Nassassian likely to become involved again?
You know, I think I have him on retainer at this point, but it's definitely in my speed dial. But another thing besides casinos having to you know, learn what to do. And if you're going to 86 someone, which you probably shouldn't in the first place because they could spend all kinds of money there anyway, if you're going to do it, just say, hey, you're going to get 86'd, cash out your money and leave and just let them go. You don't need to escort them out. You don't need to try to intimidate them. And then if they don't leave, which no AP would do, they're not just going to stick around, then you have to maybe do something else. But it also comes down to APs. I was listening to a show, a Gambling with an Edge show, a couple weeks ago, and you know, I'm not trying to attack this guy, but it was one of the church team guys, and he was like, oh, I'll just, if they want to back room me, I go in the back room, absolutely, and I tell them what I'm doing, and you know, we have a good time. And I was just sitting there in my room just stunned believing that an AP would say this. I mean, if there's people out there allowing this, then why would a casino need to change? As soon as a casino does this to me and violates my rights, no, you know for sure I'm calling a lawyer.
Yeah, yeah, I was kind of stunned by that as well.
Yeah, I did ask Richard about that afterwards, and he goes, I can't believe he said that. So, actually, one of the things you said a couple years ago on 10-10-10, so October 10th, 2010, the Suncoast Casino here in Vegas was offering 10 times points. And so a certain $5 game was worth $300 or $400 an hour, something like that. So I played on it. I lasted about 20 minutes before they came to back me off with six security guards.
Okay. That's
aggressive. And two different security men. Like, I'm this 60-something-year-old guy. Like, I'm going to... So anyway, six security guards, and they walked me to the cage. They kept their distance, but there was three of them at all times. So I decided I had to go to the front desk, and then I went and I walked down to one end of the casino, and then I walked to another end, and three guards are watching me all over the place. And so I went upstairs, they followed me, and then I went down. It's like, why not play with them? So they never got close. They just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to play any video poker machine. But
I didn't leave immediately. It's just bad management.
There's,
you know,
there's security there to do all kinds of things, and they're spending six, seven guards on one AP. I mean, that's unbelievable. That happened to one of my friends too, Kyle, who was on with me before. He got thrown out of a place, seven security guards, and when they walked him out, they had just stood right on the strip, like blocking the door, and Kyle just stood there, and he was like, what do you think I'm going to do? There's seven of you. You think I'm going to walk back in? And they're like, we have to stand here until you leave. And it's just like, okay, guys, like this is unbelievable.
I you know what? I have to tell you a story, though, about a smart casino person. A guy from one of the biggest teams, you know, the size of a team that bet three hands at 10,000, was playing in, I guess I could say where, Caesar's Palace. And he left his day planner with all of his phone numbers, all of his contacts, all of his information in it. And he left it on the table.
That was a smart move.
And this casino manager knew someone who had connections to both the casino industry and the playing side. And he called him up and he said, hey, this guy left his planner here and I have it. And call him, tell him that I will return it to him personally and agree not to open it and look inside if he will give me his promise that he will not play here anymore and keep his team out of here.
That's
and
excellent.
The guy made the phone call, and they made that agreement, and he went and, you know, shook his hand, gave him back his planner, and as far as I know, never opened it and looked inside. Now, there's a classy way to handle a situation, I thought.
Yeah, not bad.
Without opening it, how did he know who it belonged to?
Well, he saw on video. They knew from surveillance who the guy was.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, we got 4 minutes left. What part of your thesis haven't we talked about yet? Have we covered everything?
I think we basically talked about everything.
All right. Is this going to be published somewhere so casinos will be able to take advantage of your expertise?
Well, yeah. It gets put online. Every year, all the UNLV theses and professional papers get, I guess, published through the UNLV library. Then some people who I know who have graduated get inquiries from journals to ask if they can publish it. So I'm not sure if it'll be published. But from what I've read so far, I think even if it is published, no one's going to listen to it.
So you actually went through the program there at UNLV. What are they teaching the future casino managers of the world about this stuff?
Well,
or does it not come up at all?
There was only one casino class, one master's casino class. I think now they're adding a master's in casino management, so there will be a lot more about casino management. But mine was technically a master's in hotel administration. So I took the one casino class, and it was really good. That's probably the class I learned the most in, but it was really about, you know, hold percentage, drop percentage. This is how you play craps. This is...
Who taught that class?
His name was Anthony Lucas. If you read basically any casino published paper, he's probably a co-author. He was really smart. They don't really teach anything about this. They don't get into it that much at all.
It'll be interesting once they add the casino management degree, what they teach.
I mean,
what do they teach these guys?
Maybe if they add a table games operation course, that I definitely would have taken that. But you're just learning, even in master's program, you're just learning kind of basics. And most people in casinos don't go to college anyway or haven't been to college, so they just probably kind of do what the guys before on top of them tell them to do. So,
yeah.
So they don't even have courses in casino math?
Oh, actually they do. Well, yeah, I took the other one. I think it was an undergraduate class. It was called Mathematics of Casino Gaming, and that's actually who was the chair. The teacher of that class was the chair of my paper. And actually, I David G. Schwartz, who's been on your show twice, I think.
Yes, he has.
He agreed to be a chair on my paper, but I kind of got so into this, I forgot to ask anyone else for help. So I took Mathematics of Casino Gaming, but that was just, you know, we went through every casino game. It's like, this is Keno. What's the odds this is going to come up? In Blackjack, what's the odds you're going to get a 15? So that... You learned mathematics behind games, but it wasn't technically, like, practically really useful.
So there's no, like, reverse kind of engineering you could have done by taking that course to recognize where the casino vulnerabilities are?
That's why I took it, actually. But not really. They did talk about loss rebates, though. That was kind of funny. They did talk about loss rebates in my casino class. I learned a lot about loss rebates.
Did they know what they were talking about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Anthony Lucas was like, any casino that offers a loss rebate is just, unless it's very well handled, is just asking for trouble.
Sounds like Anthony Lucas is somebody we should get on the show.
He probably would.
All right. We've been talking to David Schwitzer, recent UNLV double master's degree. Apparently got a check from Virgin River rather recently.
Yep.
So thank you very much for being here. Good night, everybody. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.